Hello, dear internet strangers. Today is Wednesday, August 31st, and we are talking in obscurity. I'm Kevin Carlson, and I'm joined by my co-host,
Steve Kubitz.
Today, we're talking about Sidney Crosby, The Rookie Year, an Audible original.
This is my pick, and I'm sure you guys have noticed. It's a long time between podcasts. I'm pretty sure the last time we did this, I very obviously definitely didn't edit it in the pick.
Nope, not at all.
It was very much of it. Recently, what happened, I had COVID, and depending on what you choose to believe, I either A, got it rescuing a whole family from a burning building, and right as I was saving Grandmama, she coughed in my face.
Right in the mouth.
Right in the mouth, and I got COVID that way. Or, option B, I was on vacation in Las Vegas and definitely got COVID there. So it's up to you, the listener, to what you choose to believe. Am I a hero? Or am I just a dude that got drunk in Vegas and got COVID there?
Yeah. I bet you didn't know that, like, radio producers often save people from burning buildings.
We do, and we also then ask how you're feeling as we're doing it. So I'm saving you. How does that make you feel?
You know, you're really heavy.
Yeah, you're really not light. Like, I'm just saying, Grandma. Maybe say no to the double stuffed Oreos next time your house burns down.
All right, well, maybe let's circle back and get into what we like about Sidney Crosby, The Rookie Year.
This is my pick, and I love sports. I'm sure I've said it before in this. So I love sort of getting a sort of inner look at what makes an athlete like Sidney Crosby, who's, whether you love him or hate him, you can acknowledge he's, at worst, one of the top five players that ever played hockey.
Yeah.
And it's cool to get sort of an inner look at what makes him a person. Because for the most part, when he's on, and I've experienced a little bit of experience here, because my old job before my current gig was I worked for what used to be the Penguins HD station. And part of that was I interviewed players, and I did things like in locker rooms and things like that. So I've met and interviewed Sidney Crosby dozens of times. Saved him from a burning building. He actually carried me out. He's much stronger than I am.
Like he's a tough guy. Yeah. He's a hockey player.
And so so hearing, when you see Sidney Crosby, anyone that works in the Pittsburgh sports media can attest that he's very much a professional. When he's on, he's on. And that's not a bad thing. But it's really cool to get a look at sort of what makes Sidney Crosby tick as a human. And I found that to be my favorite part of this, my favorite part of this Audible original.
Yeah, I mean, I think we
can. I'm going to call it a book, just so you guys know.
Like it's shorthand.
I'm calling it a book. But I just loved getting to sort of know what makes Sidney Crosby tick, and I thought that was cool.
Yeah, I mean, I like the immediacy of how quick it jumps into the interviews. You are brought right back to the day that Pittsburgh wins the draft lottery and they're drafting Sidney Crosby. And I'm not the biggest of sports fans, but he was so big an event in Pittsburgh history that I remember that day. I remember the conversations I had with people that day, because every conversation was about Sidney Crosby. And like, I think it's cool and interesting of how something, an event in the sports realm, could be so transcendent it like crosses all barriers. And like, I liked reliving that experience again with this.
Yeah, I remember so vividly. Because I was in high school when he got drafted. It was also trippy because we were celebrating the fact that a dude that was my age got, is now a superstar athlete. And so I remember so vividly, we were talking about this off air, that I remember that when I was going to, this pre, because we're old, this is pre-Twitter, pre-Facebook, I think there's just MySpace. And I'm pretty sure MySpace wasn't breaking news. So, this was
A lot of music, though.
Yeah, a lot of music and a lot of weird. It made people probably better at coding, which is cool. But I remember I was logging on to play Warcraft 3, and I got a text from a friend of mine about, oh my god, the Penguins won the draft lottery. And I remember immediately, instead of going to play Warcraft, I went to a Penguins fan site, and it was just, everyone was so abuzz about, because this wasn't. What makes it such a unique circumstance, and the book gets really into this a lot, is that this wasn't just a bad team getting the first overall pick. Like, when the Penguins drafted Lemieux, they tanked the year before. And they admit that. They said, we know we have a chance to get this once-in-a-generation player. We're going to put the worst team on the ice because we want the number one pick. This was unique because it was coming off a lockout. Yeah. So every team had a chance to win the Sidney Crosby sweepstakes. And that is a very unique thing you've never seen since in hockey or any sport, where it's every single team. So theoretically, he could have went to, at the time, the Detroit Red Wings, who were one of the, you know, the Stanley Cup winner. You know, they were such a good team. So he could have went there. You know, that's what's crazy about the Sidney Crosby sweepstakes, was that every team sort of had a chance to get him.
Yeah.
And it just so happened that, you know, the luck of the envelope went to the Penguins. And there's something so cool about the way that you had the lockout, so there was no hockey for a year. Hockey was waning in popularity around Pittsburgh because the Penguins were so bad for the few years after. They traded Yager. You know, they were almost declared bankrupt. They had declared bankruptcy. They almost moved to Portland. Mm-hmm. You know, there was so much going against hockey in Pittsburgh. And I remember the year before, there was talk, they wanted a new arena, and the city said, no, we're not giving you a new arena. And then immediately, when they get Crosby, they're like, well, we'll
give you that new arena.
We'll look at this new arena thing now, I guess.
Now that you get an ace, we'll talk about that. That reminds me of, like, an inappropriate story, which, warning, this is inappropriate.
You're underage. Don't listen to this.
Yeah, it's one of those. It isn't about draft day, but it was after Crosby was living in Pittsburgh, and he was living with Mario at the time. And, like, it was, like you said, and it reminded me of this, of he was our age. And I was still in high school. It was my senior year. And I believe I was having this conversation with an underclassman who was a junior while we were in band, because we were those kind of losers. And he was a huge hockey fan. And he was just talking my ear off about it the whole time. We were on the bus to somewhere. And I'm like, okay, let's focus on what we're doing today. He goes, no, Kev, I don't think you understand how much I love Sidney Crosby. I'm like, okay, I get it. He goes, I would do anything for him. I'm like, okay, we're going into the weird stage of this conversation now. Like, I get it. He goes, if he needed me to suck his dick, I would. I'm like, of all the things I think that Sidney Crosby possibly needs, I don't think that, like, to address his homesickness, he probably has, because, you know, he comes coming from Canada, live in a strange
small city. Town in Canada.
Yeah, I mean, not that Pittsburgh is huge, but, like, it's still a city. Living with one of the greats, Mario, I don't think he needs a 17-year-old boy to suck his dick.
He's not a member of the Catholic Church.
Like, yeah. I don't think that would make him feel better about
it. I love the thought of, though, what the scenario... Because if the multiverse is real, that means there is a universe somewhere where your high school chum, was, for whatever reason, had no choice but to suck Sidney Crosby's dick.
So that he could win the Stanley Cup, I guess.
Yeah, who knows what... Like, there's definitely some universe where that's true. I like to think so. I'm an optimist. I believe that everyone...
I don't know if that's optimism or not, but... I mean, that is one of the things, like, that conversation is drilled into my mind.
I could not imagine, you know, I love sports. Sports are probably my second favorite hobby. Probably, honestly, after probably books and, you know, I love sports.
Yeah.
And there's never a scenario where I think, you know what I would do for this? Here's how much I love sports. Let me tell you right now. No. Like, that's honestly my limit. Like, I'll drive you a place. I will buy you something if you need. Not that you have more money than me. Why am I buying you something, you freaking cheapskate? But I don't think there's a scenario where I have to then,
you know,
blow an athlete.
No.
I mean, maybe I'd do it for the story. Let me tell you. Let me tell you about my weekend.
It reminds me of, like, I have more than one Sidney Crosby story. And I haven't met him like Steven here, because Steven knows people. But I had a friend who, she and her boyfriend, who's a big hockey fan, met him in a bar once. And he's a really nice guy. And they asked to take a picture with him. And he did. He took a picture with her. And then he took a picture with her boyfriend. And it was mainly for her boyfriend's sake, because, I mean, she wasn't into it as much. This guy was so excited to meet Sidney Crosby. And Sidney Crosby fucking blinked in that picture. And, like, his eyes were just closed. So she knew that I tutored people in Photoshop. And she asked me, can I fix this? And I spent hours staring at Sidney Crosby's face in very close detail to, like, try to make his eyes open. And what I ended up doing is cutting off his head from another photo and putting it back on there and just...
That's what I would have done, too.
Because, like, in the photo with her, he had his eyes open, so, like, I just took that. I just decapitated Sidney Crosby. Put his head
You lived there. Every single Washington Capitals fan dream of decapitating Sidney Crosby.
I mean, but, like, the end result looked pretty good, if I have to say so myself. I'm not going to share that with anyone, because I don't need anybody telling me about how shitty my work was.
You're just bad at Photoshop.
Like, I got paid for the job, and so she was happy with it. He was happy with it.
That's I love that.
Apparently on his wall somewhere.
I like that he's a framed photo that you photoshopped. I like that.
Like, he has a framed photo of him and Sidney Crosby at a bar.
You should have put a very small picture of you in his eye, like that white of his eye, and see if he noticed. Just you, just looking very like very mischievous inside Sidney Crosby's eye, and see if he noticed.
I spent hours, like putting his head from one picture on the other, making it look right. He's like. He stood slightly differently. It was the same bar and the same, like, pose and everything, but, like, the lighting was slightly different. So I did, like, there was this whole blue shift happening on the one side of his face. It was the whole thing.
I wonder if the bar was Mario's, because he always, that's where a lot of Penguin players went in the early, the mid-2000s.
Probably was.
They were always there, man. The amount of stories about Penguin players at Mario's, nothing bad, nothing nefarious, but just, that's where they would go, and they would get very, very drunk. That's why if you've ever been in Mario's in Southside, you'll see a bunch of signed Penguin jerseys.
Yeah.
Because they loved hanging out there. Max Talbot lived like a stone's throw from there.
Hmm.
And he was a superstar. Superstar driven for Max Talbot.
But, still love that bar. But
yeah, it's a great place. But yeah, there's definitely like a... For me, like the sort of drive this home is there's something so cool about... So someone like Sidney Crosby... I've said this about him. I've said this about a lot of great like athletes. They're better at their thing than I'll ever be at anything.
Mm-hmm.
And but with that, there's a certain almost inhumanity to them because they're. It's like could you imagine Tom Brady or Sidney Crosby or LeBron James? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna watch Netflix this weekend. I can't picture it. I'm sure they do.
Yeah, I'm sure they have other interests outside of that.
But they're so laser-focused on the thing they like, so it really is cool to get a sort of look at Sidney Crosby as a person. It's what makes him being a funny, engaging, warm dude. Because, you know, when I would see him, I was a member of the media. So, like, he was never off.
Mm.
He was, everything was always, you got to be on just in case something could be written about you. Or in my case, broadcasted. But I do love that so much, and...
I think we also talked about how like it was interesting in this to see all the other people in Sidney Crosby's life around him and what their comments on him was like.
That's sort of my other like thing I love about this book is that you know when you're Sidney Crosby, you know your circle's probably not large other than your teammates. You know, you don't run and you know he's not you don't really hear any Sidney Crosby like things in the world. He doesn't go on podcasts. He doesn't do big interviews. He doesn't do big like theatrical things.
Wouldn't it be amazing if he were fucking here right now and like we chose this moment for him to shine?
Ladies and gentlemen, Sidney Crosby.
And no, he is absolutely.
He is not here because why would he be? I like that you people out there believed it for probably a brief second.
Like, oh my god, they got Sidney Crosby. No,
this podcast, which got four listeners, and I'm one of them. And one of them is Steve's. One of them is Steve's uncle Cliff. Who I just made up, who doesn't exist. But, no, you made me look, damn it, I lost my point now because of this. But, oh, yeah, no, I love hearing his teammates say, like, funny anecdotes. The one that sticks out to me the most is they asked the previous year before Sidney was drafted, the number one overall pick, Marc-Andre Fleury, who's, you know, Hall of Fame goalies, you know, three Stanley Cups, been great everywhere. What was your first impression of Sid? And he was like, well... He had a very cute face and a very big butt. And I just love so much, and I'm not going to try to do an impression of Fleury, but you know, he's a very French-Canadian sounding individual, and hearing him say he's just got a big butt was just so, because having been in the Penguins locker room multiple occasions, I can attest, Sidney Crosby has a very large butt. That's what makes him, that's, it's funny, because if you ever listen to opponents talk about what makes Sid so hard to defend, it's that when he's in front of the net, and he like lowers and puts his center of gravity really low, it's because his butt is large and he really just forces his way, and he's It's an incredible, cool thing. But it's the thing is, that is a, you know, hearing his teammates talk about stuff like that and people that have played with him and practiced with him and spent, think about how many days they're together, all those little anecdotes about Sid. You know, the one that sticks out to me the most, other than the Fleury, is Colby Armstrong, who was a very decent, you know, Penguin player for a couple years. Him talking about he was so used to Sid being just always on as a rookie. He was just never, you know, was because he was only 18 years old, so he couldn't go out really. So he pretty much just practice, hotel, if they're on the road, practice, dinner, home, back to the hotel. And Colby was 22 years old, so he was out getting annihilated somewhere. And he came back at like 3 in the morning to the hotel with McDonald's. And he was really embarrassed because he thought Sid would judge him, because Sid was so regimented with his, like, the way he ate. You know, everything was very, like, structured. And he thought, Sid's going to judge me if I have McDonald's. I have to, like, hide this. So he went to the bathroom of the hotel, in their hotel room, eating McDonald's. And Sid, of course, comes to at, like, 3 in the morning, walks in, and Colby looks all like, oh, no, no, no. And Sid goes, you got anything for me? And they just sat there eating, like, double cheeseburgers and French fries from McDonald's till, like, 4 in the morning. And I'd love thinking about Sidney Crosby, this, like, superstar athlete, doing the same thing I do when I'm drunk, which is I really want McDonald's.
Food. Well, I don't think he was.
He wasn't drunk. He was sleeping.
He was just sleeping.
But, like, there's something to be said about it. I just love that.
I love that, like, waking up, do you have anything for me to eat? I love that story, too. But I think that from there, we're going to transition into our dislikes of this. So you want to kick us off on this
segment? Yeah, so my primary gripe with this, and so this is very much a sports book. It's if you like hockey, or you like Sidney Crosby, or you like the Pittsburgh sport, you'll love this. Mm. I don't think it's good enough to transcend that. You know, I always say that there are certain things that, even though they're sports related, they transcend the genre. Like the movie Moneyball.
Yeah.
You could know nothing about baseball, but it's such a good movie that it doesn't matter.
Yeah, and like I wrote a review of this on the blog, right?
Oh, you blog?
Yeah, yeah. Companion podcast, which I always forget to say at the beginning of these things. But yeah, the blog, Writing Obscurity, I wrote a review of this, and I remember saying in my, as I was closing out my review, that like I'm not much as a sports guy, and as much as I enjoyed how exciting this was and how the other aspects of it, there was a lot that was wasted on me because like I just don't have that kind of fandom, and like I liked it a lot because I was purposely keeping an open mind. Like, yeah, this is not my usual thing, but I enjoy learning about people who are the best at what they do. It doesn't matter what that thing is. I like to hear what their day is like. But if you're not a hockey fan, there's not going to be much else to it.
I think that's what's tough about this is when I picked it, you know, granted, we can talk about whatever we want. It's our freaking podcast, and you're the, you know, it's your blog, so you can pretty much do whatever you want, you know. And when I picked this, you know, I just went into it with this, oh, I'm so excited to listen to it, and I loved it. But I'm realizing, you know, unlike a lot of things we cover, where they're pretty, we obviously cover some like science fiction stuff, and we did some horror stuff, and things like that. So we don't really do a lot of like, I would say like, not that sports are niche, because sports are the most like popular thing in the country. But if you're not, for people that really love books and people that really love sports don't often cross over. And I'm not saying that people that like sports, because I love sports, but like if you're really into sports, books aren't always your number, you know, they don't really cross over. You don't really, it's just your, you know, that's sort of the way it works sometimes.
I feel that this is the first thing that we've like talked about where we didn't come down on like, oh, I highly recommend this. Like, this is I recommend it with this qualifier.
Yeah, that's the best way to put it, is that like, if you like hockey or like sports at all, yeah, I recommend this highly. I recommend to my father-in-law. My father-in-law, hockey is his like life, other than his wife and kids. Mm. You know, and I guess he likes me, I guess. Yeah. Maybe. Likes me enough. Okay. But, you know, I recommended this highly to him because I knew he would absolutely love learning about Crosby, the Fleury interviews, because Fleury's his favorite player. And people like that, absolutely, I think this is perfect. But if you're a person that, this doesn't transcend genres. It doesn't make it so that it's so good that if you listen to it and know nothing about hockey, you'll get something out of it. And I think that is, you know, that's, kind of not a failure of the story or the failure of the production of it, but I it's definitely a strike against it.
Yeah, it's very targeted into its audience. And if you're not part of that audience already, or at least tangentially aware of it, it's not going to do much for you.
The one thing that also bothers me about this, and I just thought of this, so Joe Manganiello, I'm sure I'm botched, but
Manganiello.
The real handsome guy, you know him, he's hot. He's the narrator from Pittsburgh. And one thing that always bothers me, and this is just a... So people, Pittsburgh is a big city. Mm-hmm. You know, we're, I think, last I checked, the 15th biggest media market in the country. So we're not a small town, by any means.
I'm actually shocked to learn this.
Yeah, we're top, at least top 20. Mm-hmm. Which is why the Pirates should spend more money, Bob Nutting. But what always bothers me when they go, in Pittsburgh, you know, it's a town that... You know, the sports are the thing that everyone cares about. No. You know, I've met a lot of people that don't give a shit about any of the Pittsburgh sports teams. I've met plenty of them. This idea that I hate when they advertise Pittsburgh as this, like monolith.
Yeah.
Everyone cares about the Steelers and the Penguins and the Pirates, and it's, like, such a big, like, so, like, no, a lot of people do, absolutely. But, like, there are just as many people that also don't give two shits.
Yeah, like, Pittsburgh's not a totally homogeneous place where everybody thinks the same way and everybody speaks the same way. Like, we make fun of the Yinzer accent, but, like, most people I meet in Pittsburgh tend to not even have that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what really stuck with me about how this book presented Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Like, that's sort of another thing. I don't, we didn't even chance to talk about it before the podcast, but I just kind of thought of it. That was the other thing I remember not really liking, was that it made Pittsburgh look like a real basic town. Basic city where, well, we only care about sports and that's it, and all we have is to be honest with you, like, yeah, when the Penguins were going through their struggles, like, I gotta be honest with you, like, yeah, when I watched the Penguins it was disappointing, but it didn't really affect my life at all.
Yeah,
same thing with, like, if the Steelers are bad, which I know they've been bad for a long time, but when the Steelers are inevitably bad again, it's not gonna ruin my life.
If to be honest, like, the primary interest, if you were talking about, like, from leisure, industry, and just activities in general, the primary preoccupation of Pittsburgh is not the steel industry like it used to be in the past. It's medicine.
Yeah.
There are a lot of doctors here. There are a lot of people that work in the services around medicine, the nurses, medical techs and stuff. There's a lot of hospitals and doctors come here. Most people and there's a pretty decent international community.
Yeah.
In Pittsburgh, because I work with, in my job, I work with people that are all over the country. It's totally off topic, but, like, I had an entire conversation where there was something in French I needed to know what this meant, and somebody on my team, he speaks French fluently, and he's from Africa, and, like, he explained it to me, and, like, it was... So, like, Pittsburgh is one of those places where we're not a monolith. There's all kinds of people from all over the world.
Yeah, and I think that's what just annoyed me about this, because, you know, it makes Pittsburgh... I don't know if you felt that way at all listening to this, but it just made me feel like it made Pittsburgh look like this stupid, we only care about our sports teams and nothing else matters if the Steelers and Penguins and Pirates aren't good. And if that were the case, if the Pirates not being good affected my mood, I'd have killed myself... Long ago.
Suicide warning.
Yeah, suicide warning, sorry. Like, not to be like, but honestly, like, I love my sports teams. I watch them religiously. You know, I watched the Pirates blow a 3-0 lead to the freaking San Francisco Giants 2 nights ago.
Yeah.
I was up at 1 a.m. watching my crappy baseball team lose their 90th game of the year.
Yeah.
So I care. But it doesn't ruin my mood. And I feel like this book, and you see this a lot about stuff when they describe Pittsburgh, that, like, we're so engrossed in our sports teams that everything else takes a backseat to it, which is not my experience in Pittsburgh at all.
Yeah, I hadn't really considered it until now, but now that you pointed out, like, yeah, that is... You have a fair point that it did really... Like, anytime sports come up in Pittsburgh, it usually comes up with the Steelers, with how much everybody loves the Steelers. And, like, there are plenty of people that don't care one way or another about football.
It just, it's meaningless to their day.
Yeah, and I've been to more baseball games but the Pirates, or see the Penguins than I've ever been to football games.
Too expensive.
They're
very expensive.
To see a team that may or may not be any good. But, yeah, there are plenty of people who are... They come here and they live here and they aren't sports fans one way or the other.
I always tell this story. I have a friend of mine, and I'll reference him if he's listening. Maybe he was. Mitch. Hi, Mitch. He's from Philadelphia, and he was in college here. And we were at Pepe's in the Strip District. And we were eating food. And he was like, oh, what are you doing this weekend? I'm like, oh, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to probably watch the Steeler game. And he was like, Mitch completely jokingly just goes, well, who are the Steelers? And this person behind us goes, you know who the Steelers are? He's like, they're a football team. And he was like, oh, are they new? He's like, and the guy's like, no, they've won, at this point, they've won six Super, or five Super Bowl titles. He's like, Super Bowl, and what is that? He's like, it's the championship of football. Oh, that's nice, I'm glad for them. And like,
is that a lot?
And Mitch was like just so funny, like, I never heard of this, are they new? Like, and I always think of like just, that's the attitude that most, I think, a good chunk of people have is, like, I don't care. Like, it's not that I think it's bad that you're doing it or watching it, but it doesn't affect their day-to-day. And it's the idea that someone would get so worked up, it's comical. So the idea that Pittsburgh is this sort of, we're so engrossed in our sports teams that everything else just stops on Sunday afternoons when the Steelers play, or whenever the Penguins play, or when the Pirates play, or the Riverhounds, go soccer, you know, but... For the most part, we're like any city where there's a lot of sports fans and there's a lot of non-sports fans.
Yeah.
I just for some reason, the thing that annoyed me the most was just hearing the way he talked about the city of Pittsburgh. And I know that Joe Manganiello, the sexy guy, is from here. He's also lived in L.A. for a long time. He's an actor. He's worked in L.A. for a long time.
So it's possible to have this rosy, like...
Yeah, so the idea that he sort of had... I don't think he represents the city as much as, like, the sports... The one that they bring him in, like... Throughout the first pitch at a Pirate game, or having to the terrible towel wave at Steeler games, he is represents us because he's this really attractive leading man in Hollywood that's from here. So it's cool, but I don't think he has any idea of what day to day life in the year of our Lord 2022 is like in Pittsburgh.
I love that you always reference the year of our Lord.
In the year of our Lord 2022.
But circle back to our the other thing that I want to talk about. I thought that. And I think there's a lot about sports figures that are the best at what they do, is that the pressure that we put on them to perform is immense, and it's unfair. Because at the end of the day, hockey's a team sport. And if the team is not doing well, it doesn't matter how good Sid plays, we're not going to win the Stanley Cup. I feel whenever you have an ace like him, he gets an inordinate amount of the blame when things go wrong. I think that the pressure that we put on these players is just because of how much we expect of them is really unfair.
I feel like with Sid, you're seeing that, especially now that he's getting older, so he's, you know, closer to the end than he is to the beginning of his career. And there are people, and I've met them in plenty of times, that think his career, like, well, he didn't do enough. Oh, he only won 3 Stanley Cups. Mm-hmm. He only won 2 Conn Smythe. He only won 3 MVP awards. As if, like, he did, one of the greatest players ever lived only did these things. Like,
yeah, but this wasn't an achievement.
But, like, if you had told somebody in 2005 when he was drafted, okay, here's how the next 17 years are going to look, or whatever it is. He's going to win 3 championships, multiple MVPs, 2 Conn Smythe, zillion time all-star, 2 gold medals, all those things he's done, whatever. People go, oh, I'll take that in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. But when you're in it, and I think what this is where Sid was a victim of, people I don't think fully appreciate. You're seeing now with the other current generation, Connor McDavid, where, well, he hasn't won a Stanley Cup yet. He's only been in the league 5 years. Sid really skewed how, because he was so successful, so early. This dude was the best player in the league at 18.
Yeah.
That does not happen. To be that good that early. I think people so Penguin Pittsburgh fans in general, when he was, you know, won an MVP his second year in the league, he was had the team in the Stanley Cup final their third year, and they won it their fourth. So people had this idea that it was going to happen every... They were going to be in the Stanley Cup every year.
Yeah.
And the fact that, like, it didn't happen that way, and he only... And I say that very sarcastically. Only won three of them, which is insane to win. People don't win... It's hard to win a championship, much less three of them.
Yeah, and the... I think that, like, there was a lot of expectation that first year, and when it didn't work out, like, to return to my point, like, the idea that this 18-year-old was going to get that team to win the Stanley Cup...
When that team was not very good before he got there.
Yeah. Like, there was no way that he could fix the underlying structural issues that they were experiencing at the time. Just because he was the best of the game from a young age, and he was on the team with Mario at the same time. At the end of the day, it's a team sport, and if there's rot in the foundation, there's only so much you can do.
Yeah, and I think that's probably the best example of when you unlike certain sports like track, where it's one person running, it's a team. It takes a whole team to win a championship, and it takes the example I always use is Mike Trout is absolutely the greatest baseball player most people have ever seen, mm-hmm. and the Angels are terrible. Because he can only get 4 at-bats a game. And there's a lot of at-bats he ain't hitting.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, that's an example of it. It's a true testament that it takes a team to win it. And it took the team being built up to match how good Sid was. Because people forget, Malkin wasn't there his first year.
Yeah.
You know, Fleury was a kid. Fleury was only, like, 20 whenever, you know, Sid got drafted. So, I mean, he was basically a small child. Mm-hmm. So, like, this idea that, like, they were going to immediately... Because I remember that. I remember thinking the team was going to be amazing just because Sid was on the team.
Yeah.
And I remember them being bad that year. But it's funny because this book made me really appreciate that team. Because mm-hmm. if Colby Armstrong, they talked to him a lot. Ryan Malone from Pittsburgh talking about, you know, how the team really bonded, even though the team wasn't good. And the team was, you know, losing a lot, but they were galvanized by the example the story talked about was trying to get Sid as 100 points, the first rookie to have 100 points since I think it might have been even like Lemieux or Gindler or something like that. Mm. So to win 100 points, score 100 points as a rookie is ridiculous.
Yeah,
and they worked really hard to get him to that, and that was their quote unquote Stanley Cup.
Yeah, I mean that's a good point. Like those. I think those interviews were pretty good, but I think you had mentioned at one point that not every interview was...
Yeah, that's sort of my other dislike of this book is there are a couple interviews that... And I interview for a living. I do it all the time. Mm. No matter how good your questions are, how good you think you're going to do, if a person's not a good interviewee, it doesn't matter. And I feel bad for harping on him a little bit, but it's the one I felt was really not great was former Penguins coach Eddie Olczyk, because almost everything he answered, whatever he was being asked, he found a way to frame it under a way that, oh, if I was just given an opportunity, the team would have done all this and this and this and this. And it's the reality of it was, you know, he was a coach that got hired because the team was going to be bad, and they knew, well, why spend a big money on a coach when this team's not good? And Eddie Olczyk was a Penguins broadcaster that got... He went from the broadcast booth to the bench. Mm-hmm. Didn't work out. He was awful and got fired and then immediately went back to the broadcasting booth. And I'll be honest, there's a reason that he got fired in 2006 and no one's thought about Eddie Olczyk as a coach since. And I think the only person that doesn't understand why is Eddie Olczyk.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really like have enough background to make those assessments, but like I think when you point it out to me, I think it is very interesting. Like I'm revisiting it in my mind of the different interviews and like, oh, okay, that makes a little more sense now. But my final point that I dislike about this is like it's not really about this book per se, but it is about the game of hockey in general, is that hockey, or like as a kid I thought it was very exciting that it was one of those sports where like I can drop the gloves and a fight will break out. And like I've always loved boxing, so that kind of appealed to me when I was younger. But like as I've grown older, I'm way more wearied by any time a fight breaks out in hockey, or any time we talked about before we started recording how there is this implicit tacit acceptance, and especially in the playoffs, where if you can't counter somebody because of their skill, you can just hurt them. You can just injure them, and that's fine. And you can get away with that. Where, like, if you were to haul off and punch anybody in basketball or football, well, that's the end of your day today. Like,
and probably the end of your season in a lot of ways.
Like, you're not allowed to do that. But in hockey, it's allowed. It's expected. Like, and I understand there's a difference between a legal hard hit and versus, like, somebody who the only reason that they're out there is to injure the best player on the other side.
Or get them into a fight so they can hurt them. You know what also, it's funny, I just thought of this. You know what really annoys me about the whole fighting culture in hockey immensely? Is on one hand, hockey will be like, listen, look at our fancy new helmets and face shields. We're protecting concussions. We have these new pads that protect the neck so concussions don't happen. Mm-hmm. 5 minutes later, look at these two people fight and punch each other in the head.
Yeah. It's
hard to take that seriously when part of the game is you get 5 minutes for fighting. It's a 5 minute penalty for, probably cause some concussions, people getting punched in the head.
Yeah, it's not an expulsion from the game. It's just 5 minutes. And I don't like the idea of any sport or competition where, well, instead of being better at the game or being the best, it's not a contest of being the best. It's the contest of, like, strategically hurting the better people so that your team wins.
That's been my problem with hockey. Because hockey is a sport in the United States. It's, and not to be an disparaging, but it's probably, what, the fourth most popular sport, arguably. And I think a large reason for that is because, so in basketball, LeBron James, when he goes out on the court in the playoffs, the rules are essentially the same. LeBron James can take over a game and no one's can just hit him to stop him from doing that.
Yeah.
You know, because if you hit him, he gets two free throws. And guess what? LeBron James is going to make those free throws. Because LeBron James is probably the greatest player that I've ever seen. I don't care. People bring up Michael Jordan. LeBron James is physically ridiculous. Whatever. But in hockey, there's this, you saw McDavid, who's the current best player in the world, talk about it a little bit at the end of the playoffs. Like, what happened? He's like, well, they're constantly, I'm being grabbed, I'm being cross-checked in the back of the head. Like, I can't get going if I'm constantly getting pummeled like this. Things that would be penalties in, if I could have hockey perfectly, if it's a penalty in February, it should be a penalty in June. It's ridiculous that the referees all of a sudden go, well, sorry, we all let the goons decide the game. Like, that's ridiculous, and they wonder why it's not more popular here. Because they don't let the big players decide it. They let the fourth line people that only exist to either injure you or make sure you can't do your job.
Yeah.
And not because they're outplaying you defensively, because they're cross-checking you or they're tripping you or they're doing things that normally would be a penalty, but for some reason referees decide, not our problem.
Yeah, it's just a tougher season because it's the postseason.
And that's so ridiculous to me. It would be the equivalent of, like, if in football, after Tom Brady can have a clean pocket for 16 or 17 games now, and all of a sudden the playoffs, you're allowed to hit him late.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's the playoffs. You got to get up, Tom. It's like, and it's, you know, don't get me wrong. Like,
I go over there and yank off his helmet.
Yeah, like, exactly. Like, but, oh, because the playoffs, it's the playoffs. It's February. It's January now. You got to be tougher, Tom. Or you got to be tougher, like, whatever. Like, that to me is insane that we let these, like, fringe, like, NHL caliber players make big, they basically decide the postseason.
Yeah.
Like, that's insane to me. And that is a fundamental reason hockey's not more popular.
Well, you want to move into our parting thoughts
before we wrap up? Absolutely, yeah, yeah. You know, and I guess sort of my main parting thought here is that, you know, whenever we look at athletes, we sort of get this very much one-sided. They're being interviewed, or they're some capacity they're on. I love getting a look at the human side of a Sidney Crosby, where it's him, and it's not just him as a person being off and sort of being relaxed. It's every one of the people he had talked to. Like, you hear all these cool stories about Sid as a person, and I love the idea that it shows you that athletes, even the greatest of them, and Sidney Crosby, whether you are a Penguin fan that loves him or a Flyer fan that hates his guts, you can acknowledge that he's maybe the third or fourth best hockey player that ever lived. And with that comes a certain level of almost, they're almost robotic.
Yeah.
Because they're always sort of on their game, and off the ice they're on their game. And I love the idea of getting to look at the human side
and seeing of the super person.
And that is a good reminder of that they're still people. Even someone as great, I will never be as good at anything as Sidney Crosby is at hockey. But at the end of the day, we're both people that are just people. And I love that sort of look inside of Sidney Crosby as just the human being, because he seems like a really cool guy.
Yeah, I think that we've touched on this in several parts of this. There is a subculture that idolizes these people and builds them up bigger than who they into bigger than what they are, and people's lives get revolve around hockey or football or whatever, and they get to this point where we were discussing, they assume that everyone else from like a particular area, like Pittsburgh, everybody's like this, we all idolize them. But like, I like hockey, I know who he is, I've seen many games, and I like, oh, if it's on I'll watch it, but like, my life does not revolve around this. And I think that that is unhealthy, that some people, they build their entire persona around being a sports fan or being anything like that. Like, I love books. I have podcasts about books. I have blog about books. I write books. But I wouldn't say that my only interest is books.
Yeah, and I think what's so fascinating about like sports fans, I always think this. So if you're over a certain age and you're wearing a sports jersey and you're wearing another man's name on your back, like, and you're an adult and you're wearing players that are like 20 years younger than you, like, come on, man. Like, that's a weird, like,
if you're at a game.
Yeah, if you're at a game. Yeah, if you're at a game, that's the like, caveat. If you're at a game, absolutely. Wear the jersey. Have fun. But if you're just like going to church and you're wearing
this Wednesday,
like, I always find that a little weird whenever like a person is, like, you always see that stereotype about Pittsburgh of, like, Yinzers will wear Steeler jerseys to any event. And every time, and maybe that's a little true, but I'm also think every time, if you're a person wearing a Steeler jersey and it's not a Steeler Sunday or a Steeler Monday, or you're not going to a game, it's July and you're just wearing a Steeler jersey, I should be allowed to tackle you.
For a second there, I thought you were, shit, I don't know anybody on the Steelers now.
I should be allowed to just hit you. Like you're walking down the street, like, and you're wearing a Kenny Pickett jersey now.
Yeah. I was looking at Ben Roethlisberger, but, like, he retired.
Yeah, but if you're wearing that, and it's not even close to a game day, I see you, I'm allowed to hit you.
Yeah.
And when you go, oh, what's going on? I go, I got a sack, baby, I win. Like,
and I just fuck off.
And I leave. And I think that's, like with sports fandom, for certain people, it does become this very all-encompassing thing, and it becomes this very much that becomes their thing. And there's nothing wrong. I love sports. You know, I cannot stress that enough. Sports are legitimately a big part of what I enjoy. When I, like, to me, almost nothing compares to when it's like a lazy Sunday in the fall, crack open a cold beer, and watch the Steelers game. That is a fun way to spend a day. However, I don't. It doesn't become my entire thing. If, like, my wife really wants to do something on us, I'm not going to be like, well, babe, it's Sunday between August and February. Sorry, babe, can't do anything.
Like, we're not going out.
Like,
Steelers Sunday.
Like, that, you know what I mean? Like, that's, and there's nothing wrong if you're entire, if that's your big hobby, God bless, man. Like, have fun. But for me, like, this idea that Pittsburgh is this sort of, where sports are just so, the only thing we care about, just, that really offends me and really bothers me because it's not all we have.
I always find, and like, maybe this is because, like, I'm the most fair weather sports fan, but whenever you get this advertisement for, like, watch all the NFL games, I'm like, I don't watch all the games of my team. What makes you think I want to watch all the NFL games?
And they're all, a lot of them at the same time. What he's just like,
well, then you're going to have to watch
them. Picture in picture, baby. Like,
yeah. But, like, because it's going to be on demand. You'd have to go back and watch them. Who is this for? Like, who actually sits down and, like, I'm going to watch, like, this is a TV show? It is a TV show, I guess, to a certain thing. But, like, I need to know not just what happened in that game, but I need to know how the Raiders played today. I need to
see how the Raiders beat the Chargers.
I need to see every down. Like, I don't give a flying fuck about the Raiders or the Chargers, but because I just need to be this kind of completionist. Who are these people?
When I first moved out of my parents' house a many, many years ago, because I'm old, one of the first thing purchases I made was NFL Sunday Ticket, so I could watch every football game.
Did you?
And no, spoilers, no. But the first year was free.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is incredible. I don't watch all, you know, but it's cool that I have the option of turning on any random football game.
How many did you actually watch?
Probably not more than, maybe two or three extra ones that I wouldn't have gotten just because they're on TV here.
Mm.
But I remember being real gung-ho, but it was free, so it didn't matter. Second year, my cable bill went up $175 because of Sunday Ticket. And I realized, oh boy, I don't care this much about a random game between the Colts and the Bengals. Not really my I don't really care that much.
Yeah, like that always fascinated me. Like this exists because there are people that do this, and I think there's a certain conversation that we're not going to get into. About like just obsession in general,
yeah,
and how much our culture just rewards that kind of like binge everything. Stephen, watch this show from start to finish tonight. Never mind the fact you have work tomorrow.
That is such a, you know what's funny is I now, because of the binging, you know, all the everything comes out at once. I almost it feels so enjoyable when something you have like a weekly release. Like, it almost feels like, ooh, this is nice. Like, I like having to sit on and think about
it. Like, think about that last episode. I purposely won't watch more than one or two episodes back-to-back of anything, even if it's all out at once, because, like, I like to digest what I just saw. But I think we should wrap up here, and next month's going to be my pick.
Yep.
And we're going to go with a very lighthearted story.
Mm-hmm.
Called Red Rising by Pierce Brown. I'm lying. It's a science fiction story that's very, very fucking dark.
Yeah, I actually thought you were going to go with the audible version about Alexander Ovechkin's rookie year.
Yeah, no, I don't give a shit.
Yeah, but no, this is exciting. I love that book. I've read it before. I'm looking forward to sort of reading it again and being depressed, because life's actually really not hard at all. So it's really cool to have fiction that makes me sad.
The Red Rising universe, just to jump ahead real quick, is what if the fascists win? And what is that like?
Well, you know, it definitely doesn't ring home at all in the United States at all. So that's great. Yeah. I'm sure that'll be a fun, just a feel-good read.
It's not like any party like has the color red as their defining feature.
Well, I'm colorblind, so I don't know. To me, Democrats and Republicans are blue versus green.
Yeah.
So
I feel bad about earlier. I had said, oh, it's the, and I thought I was being clever, it's the green door, which is beside a red door.
Kevin, you're very insensitive. Talk about Red Rising.
All right. Well, let's call it a day here.
All right, well, have a good day, y'all. Thanks for listening.